Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who still likes to build a fort, Pete Chwaba.
Welcome back to hour number two of Nightlight here on this Wednesday night. If you are hanging with us instead of watching the Democratic National Convention, we welcome you. Great to have you. My guest right now is Mike Toomey. Mike is a TV show host and a comedian, and he is joining us tonight for a little bit on Nightlight, sticking around for a third segment. Mike, we were talking about characters that work through their problems on sitcoms. When sitcoms go serious.
Yes.
Greg Brady started smoking. What did you think about that?
Before we hit that, Elizabeth Berkley was the name I couldn't remember. Elizabeth Berkley.
Yes.
Yes. So, but yeah, well, Greg Brady, if you remember, Cindy saw Greg smoking. And he was like, you know, every time he took a puff, he would start coughing. And then one of Greg's friends, his mom, who was before they called him Karen, she was like a Karen of the early 70s. She went really took an attitude on Greg for smoking. Well, turns out the jackets got mixed up and it was her son who was really buying the cigarettes. I'm saying, like, she made the big deal and it was her, like, she had to apologize. Because Alice remembered she had to sew the lining of Greg's pocket of his jacket, and this one didn't have the torn pocket. So is that other
pretty
kid.
Convenient for Greg.
Yeah.
And Carol's not even really his mom.
Right.
So I feel like Mike should have played point on that one.
How come they never said that? You know, you're not my real mom.
You talked too about like sitcom formulas early, Mike. Where do you think that came from? And did they just keep doing it because it works or what?
I think so. I think like everything had to happen first. Like, you know, they say all those variety show and talk show bits, they say Steve Allen did them first, you know? So I think maybe right. If you go back to the earliest sitcoms or even like radio shows, the same gags just keep popping up. You just have to find different ways to dress them up. Like, you know, there's always that scene where like on Gilligan's Island where Gilligan is trying to tell Skipper that his leg is on fire, but he's too busy. No, Gilligan, but Skipper, Gilligan, I'm talking to the professor right now, but Skip, you know, and it's like, how many times has that happened in a sitcom? Like they won't let the guy tell him what he has to tell him, but it's something like that. He, you know, he's about to step in a bucket of paint or, you know, his pants are on fire. No, Gilligan, would you, Gilligan, stop it. I can't feel it.
You have a, I've always been fascinated, Mike, with your knowledge of like TV shows and older sitcoms too. Do you have a favorite black and white sitcom?
Well, I mentioned Andy Griffith and, Dick Van Dyke. I think maybe those are my two favorite of the black and white. Andy Griffith crossed over into color. After 5 years, the show ran years, and after 5 years, it went over into color, and the shows were so much worse. And I don't know if what the connection there was. One, Don Knotts had left, but two, the scripts just got kind of lazy. And Andy Griffith originally said, "I'm doing this show for 5 years." So when they went into the fifth season, he told people, "You might want to start looking for other work because I'm done after this season." But the show was so like wildly successful. They talked him into doing 3 more years and convinced him with a lot of money. So it looks, if you watch it, it looks kind of like he's phoning it in a little bit. In the meantime, Don Knotts left because he took a deal, you know, doing all those movies that he's famous for doing, you know, Mr. Limpet, right. Ghost and Mr. Chicken and all those. So he
Apple
took
Dumpling
off.
Yeah.
So he was gone because he left because he didn't think the show was going to, you know, be on anymore.
Wow, that's interesting. I don't know what it is. I could never really like, other than The Honeymooners, I just never liked watching black and white shows. Like,
I'm like
I did
kids.
Watch the Dick Van Dyke. What's that?
You sound like my kid.
I know. I like, I don't know. They did kind of progress, or they got jokier. The jokes got better. Mm-hmm. I feel like with Gleason, you didn't really need jokes. It came out of the character, and he's such a great actor, aside from being funny.
He was also like a great improviser, because they said one of the things that he hated most was rehearsing. Like, he just wanted to show up and do it. He didn't want to rehearse. And I think that's what the stammering was born of. You know, like, you watch The Honeymooners, and Gleason had this signature move where he'd get, you know, uncomfortable, or he didn't know what to say, and he'd start going, hamana, 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 hamana. So I truly believe that came out of his, you know, dislike for rehearsing, and he didn't always know what was next in the script.
So I'm glad we have you here. My guest is Mike Toomey. He's a TV host and a phenomenal comedian who we got to plug your Christmas show, Mike, before you leave too. What do you like? You have a lot of knowledge of 60s and 70s sitcoms. We haven't talked a whole lot about them on this show. What was a better era? What was the best era for sitcoms in your opinion? And do you go 60s or 70s?
I think the 50s kind of broke all the ground, you know, and figured out how to do it and establish a lot of the gags, so that the 60s maybe took it from there and made it more smooth and had better scripts and things like that. 70s, like I was saying before, got kind of jokey on us a little bit. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I would have to say maybe 60s. If you take a step back and look at both decades, I would say maybe 60s probably had a little better writing and a little better, you know, finesse to it as opposed to just telling jokes. And then, you know, the 90s came shows like Seinfeld, which, you know, just reinvented sitcoms way better.
Yeah. It's funny because I, you know, when our mutual friend Greg Leanne and I would write together and we would talk about comedy, and he would say he hates jokes in movies or TV. And I don't like overt jokes, but I think great jokes can be disguised through the character and through dialogue. You know, it's so you don't see that it's a joke. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. If you play it out in the context of a scene. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Mike, like, who would you want to post?
Wacky. Go ahead, sorry. I'm sorry. Like a guy saying something and then looking right in the camera, and then you hear a laugh track.
Right. Here comes the zinger.
Right.
All right. So if you had your own sitcom, Mike, to circle back to the spouse thing, who would you want to play your wife in the sitcom?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one.
Knowing she could never live up to your actual wife, who's an awesome person. This is just for fun.
Who would I want to play the role?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd really have to think about that. And of course, I would naturally go through the casting process and be a bigger man. Or Jim Belushi. Or I'll tell you what, Jeff Garland is one of my best friends. But boy, the Goldberg certainly follows that formula, too.
Yes. I'm sure Jeff would admit that too, right?
Yes, he would.
If you had to pick a favorite sitcom of all time, what would it be?
Maybe Seinfeld.
Yeah. It's hard to go wrong with that. I mean, you're right. It was so groundbreaking and so funny. And you're saying that's your favorite, and I'm agreeing with you. And the lead actor wasn't even that great.
He admittedly was the weak link as far as acting goes.
But you still put it at number one. That's how doggone funny the show was.
Right, and how unbelievable that cast. Those three, how are you ever going to find those three like that again to be on that show with you and be that good?
Absolutely. Do you have a least favorite sitcom, Mike?
the first one that pops to mind is Small Wonder. You remember Small Wonder?
No, what's that?
The family had a robot, a daughter who was a robot. And she talked like this. I am sorry that I knocked that over. Like, she wasn't even like a robot in disguise. A stereotypical robot. Small Wonder.
That weird, it wasn't an X or a Y chromosome got in there. It was the robot chromosome, and they just had a robot.
Yeah, they are.
What are you watching, Mike? Can you recommend anything? Have you seen any of the summer movies?
You know what? I have not, but we have the Deadpool Wolverine on our list that we really want to go see.
Okay.
Have you seen that yet?
I have not seen that. And I have to be honest, I've not seen either of the first two ones either. I'm not necessarily a superhero guy, but the whole Marvel thing, I'm just kind of behind on. So I'd like to see the first, at least one of them before I see this one.
Knowing your sense of humor as I do, you should see both of those Deadpool movies with Ryan Reynolds. You will really like it. You'll really enjoy it. And then this third one with Hugh Jackman.
Okay. So wait, but you haven't seen this one yet, right?
I haven't seen the new one yet, no.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's on my list. I mean, it set records. It's like the number one R-rated film at the box office ever. That's insane.
Wow. Wow, it's crazy.
Yeah. What about TV? You got any TV shows you can recommend or anything you're watching?
No, you know what? We're always like 10 years behind. Like, well, here's something that somebody said they watched, like, you know, in 2014, and that's us being caught up. So not really anything streaming that's actually current right now.
Okay. All right. We have just a few seconds left. Mike, tell us.
Right now. I'm giving you a lot. Like, you give me questions and I give you like, no, I don't know, nothing.
That's okay. It's different. You know, it's obvious that I didn't prepare you, or I'm not looking for a gotcha moment or to make you cry or anything like that. You know,
when I hang up, you're going to say to your listeners, what a turd. Like, that was the worst. Oh, that guy.
What was that? tell us about the Christmas show. And obviously we'll have you on again before it happens, but I just think it's such a cool thing you do down in Southeast Wisconsin.
Thank you. Yeah, for years we had done it in Sturtevant, which is essentially Racine. And last year we did it for the first time in Kansasville, which is just down the road from Racine, at a place called 1175. And coincidentally, it was at the intersections of Highway 11 and 75. And we do this every year. We do it the Saturday after Thanksgiving. And I always have, like, comedy guests. We write new sketches and new bits for every show that's always holiday related. And, we have a very faithful crowd that comes out every year to come see us. And it really is the most fun I have doing comedy.
All right. Fantastic. What we'll do is we'll have you on before the tickets go on sale. We'll push it again. All right. Sound good?
Sounds good, Pete.
Awesome, buddy. Thanks, Mike. Have a great night.
All right. See ya.
That's Mike Toomey. We'll be right back with Matt Miller, Milwaukee film critic, on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. It's always fun to talk to Mike Toomey, one of my very good friends. We are going to move the show along right now and talk to our good friend from Milwaukee, a Milwaukee film critic and TV critic, and he writes about entertainment, and he's very good at what he does. We always like talking to our next guest. Matt Miller joins us now. Matt, how are you?
Hey, howdy. I'm doing great.
It's good to see you, bud.
Oh,
what's new?
It's good to see you, too.
Thanks, man.
Stay on the radio since no one else can see you, but it's good to hear and see.
That's right. Well, it's like we're having coffee right now or something, so that works.
Exactly. That's the vibe right now.
How are you? Summer is winding down, Matt. Milwaukee is such a great summer town. You got parades, festivals, concerts, everything, sporting events. How's your summer been, and what is left in Milwaukee that you're excited about?
It's been tremendous this summer. I just did a baseball trip. My dad and I do a baseball trip every year to a different part of the country. And this is, my brother-in-law has gotten involved. And when we go to a place that's exciting to my sister and my mom and my wife, they come along too. So this year we all went down to Carolina, saw the minor league Asheville Tourists, saw the minor league Carolina Mudcats of the Brewers minor league system. And on the movie beat, saw the Durham Bulls of the famous Bull Durham, which was great, which was a really good time being there and seeing the actual bull, that if you hit the bull, you win a steak. so it was a really great time. And there's still all sorts of really great things to do in summer in Milwaukee. I think September is basically honorary summer now in Milwaukee.
Oh, nice.
Because September is so nice now. For probably reasons that are environmentally destructive to our planet. at least we in the Midwest get to benefit from a very nice September. You do still have a lot of live summer music series throughout town. You have those beer gardens around town. There's that patio drinking life. You know, it's just a bunch of Milwaukee and Wisconsin still stay alive and stay, you know, up to stuff during all of this.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I remember talking to a buddy of mine who lives in Southern California, and he said, what's it like there where you moved to and where you are? And I said, Wisconsin is kind of like Margaritaville. And he's like, he goes, what? Like, how can that be? And I'm like, no, it's not warm in the winter, but that's just kind of the state of mind. And that just reminded me of when you were talking about the beer gardens through September. And yeah, people like just to have a good time. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, we still have a bunch of festivals. I mean, Pet Fest is coming up in September 21st, Bayview Bash, September 21st as well. You got Taco Fest on September 14th. So a lot of excuses to still get out there and enjoy Milwaukee neighborhoods and enjoy, like I said, I'm knocking on all the wood in this room right now. You know, hopefully September lives up to what I've talked about. But they owe us, especially considering May and April were really rainy and glum to kind of start the summer off.
I agree. They owe us. Your dad, of course, give your dad a shout out. Gene Miller from WTMJ just retired recently. Is he around more now? He's such a fun guy.
It's ironic you say that. He's actually leaving town, country, state this tomorrow. He's going to Ireland for a trip. Yeah, he's been really living that retired life. He's been having a lot of fun with that, seeing new places, going on trips, texting me at 7 a.m. every day to complain about ESPN's coverage. He's not a fan of sports, of what has happened to TV sports media in particular. It's great. He's really enjoying being retired.
Hey, I want to ask you something too. You're like just such a great Milwaukee guy. My son just moved to Milwaukee and he's living on the east side. And what do you think? And I spent a lot of time on the east side when I was doing stand-up comedy at the Comedy Cafe. I had so much fun. It was like one of my favorite neighborhoods in the whole country is the east side of Milwaukee. And I'm not asking you to say where you live, but what are some of your favorite neighborhoods in Milwaukee?
I mean, I love Bayview. I lived in Bayview for several years in my 20s and even a little bit into my 30s. And I love it there. You've got such a great mix of everything in there where, like, I can take my dad to like the Newport or something like that, or to the Highbury, like these dive bars, but then you can also get really great food down there, and they just keep opening great restaurants down there too. And then, you know, you've got places like Vanguard, which is kind of like in the middle of, you know, being a dive bar and being a really great restaurant. It kind of like tiptoes that line between being both of those things. I really love Bayview and the vibe down there and the kind of just like everybody hangs out with everybody. That's probably my favorite Milwaukee neighborhood, but I have a soft spot. I also lived in River West for several years. So I have a soft spot for Cafe Centro and, you know, a lot of the places down there as well. Honestly, it's really hard to find a bad neighborhood in Milwaukee. And I know I sound like such a cheerleader, but there's so many great, cool places to check out in Milwaukee. And, you know, I know we're out of the pandemic, air quotes, and all that stuff, but places still need you to go to them, you know?
Yeah.
We see that with movie theaters, you know? I know we're past, you know, the shutdowns and stuff like that, but movie theaters are still struggling and they still need people to show up to movies and show your support with money. And they've got great movies to show. And honestly, there's no place better to watch a movie than on the big screen. I'm sorry, streaming, but whenever I watch a streaming movie, it feels cheap and I am distracted. And I love and it's not even like, I don't think I'm a very ADD person. I don't think I'm somebody who like needs to be on my phone. I know I'm the opposite. My parents can attest to that. I do not call or text enough. But you know, when you're watching a movie on your couch, and you have your phone sitting there, or you have your dishes sitting there. It's just not the same experience. That is, when you see a movie, you are committing to the experience. You are committing to caring about that movie and meeting that movie halfway. And we're kind of missing that if you see something on streaming.
Absolutely. And you're with other people too. It's a collective experience, which is what I think is so cool.
I think that's why horror movies are one of the kind of pandemic proof genres of movies still, that, you know, you don't want to watch a horror movie at home, because it's right. it's too scary, is that you're watching this and you're like, oh, I'm in my house where people are probably, you know, but also, you know, you want to experience a horror movie with the excitement of a collective electricity of a room full of people being scared at the same time and being tense.
Yes.
The collective laughter after a big scare sequence when people are like, you know, nervously chuckling at one another. I mean, I know some people don't like going to like the 10 o'clock movies because the young kids, they don't behave and stuff like that. That's a part of going to a horror movie. You know, I feel like if you're going to a horror movie and you have a crowd of young kids like nervously tittering at each other when like something scary is on approach, then that's a part of the vibe. You know, that's why the Activity became a massive 6-movie hit. It certainly wasn't because of the production value.
Absolutely. And we did a thing yesterday on popcorn. We had a popcorn maker on the show, and he was talking about, you know, it's America's movie time snack. So we were talking about popcorn, and I did some research, and they said the popping of the popcorn as you walk into the theater kind of sets the stage and like builds up. It's like an opening act almost, hearing that popcorn pop, especially for a scary movie.
Yeah, so, I'm that way with movie trailers. I know some people like movie trailers. I like the kind of calm of watching the movie trailers and being like, ooh, this is getting me in the mood. This is getting me in the atmosphere.
Build up.
Watching a thing, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, Matt Miller is here. We're going to take a short news break, and then we're going to come back. I'm going to talk to Matt about all things movies, and he's going to give us some great recommendations. That's coming up next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are back during hour number two here of Nightlight. Great to have you with us. If you're joining us on the stream tonight, my guest is Matt Miller. Matt is a film critic, has been on this show many times, Milwaukee based. Matt, let's talk about some movies. You saw Deadpool, right?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. What are your thoughts? I haven't seen any of the Deadpools, so I'm really behind on that, as well as superhero movies in general. So what did you think of Deadpool?
I'm in the minority on Deadpool and Wolverine in that I don't think it's very good. It feels like trivia and nostalgia and profanity held together by duct tape and spinal column fluid. Like, it is, I get why people enjoy it. It is very Disney in that it is throwing things at the audience that they can point to, like the Leonardo DiCaprio meme from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and they can point at the screen and go, I recognize that. But, and I'm gonna spoil some things right now for some people. I don't understand why anyone would be nostalgic for Elektra. I don't understand why anyone would be nostalgic for the concept of Channing Tatum playing Gambit, which wasn't even in a movie, but was a failed movie premise. And so, we have dug into, your past guest is correct that I think you should watch the first two Deadpool movies, which are better than I think than Deadpool Wolverine. Because I think if you're not super into Marvel comic book movies and you're not into the behind the scenes drama of comic book movies for the past 20 years, so much of Deadpool and Wolverine is going to fly over your head. You're going to have if you care a lot about the Fox Disney merger and what that means to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, this movie is great. If you have no idea what that last sentence meant, then Wolverine will be absolute nonsense to you. And I think even if you do understand like the Disney Fox merger and stuff like that, there's just something a little gross about Disney buying Fox, wiping Fox basically off the face of the earth, you know, picking them away from for scraps, and then making this movie kind of dancing on its grave and being like, ha ha ha, we have all your properties now. Everyone loves Deadpool because he's in the MCU. Goodbye, Fox. And then you end the movie on a literal like graduation eulogy where you're like, we're sorry, Fox, that we killed you. You were really nice. Thanks, Fox, for existing. Rest in peace, Fox. It's just, it's like a serial killer eulogizing its victims. It's a very kind of, it's kind of gross when you sit and think about it. But like I said, I'm in the vast minority. The movie has become the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time.
How
one
about
of the
that?
Highest grossing movies of all time, period. Just
yeah.
So clearly people are really enjoying it and I'm happy for them. It's not a terrible movie. It's not a movie that I was like sitting there being like, we have wasted the art of cinema, but I did not have a very fun time and it did not sweeten as I sat on it.
That's what I love about you, Matt. I love that brutal honesty. And that's why I like reading your reviews, not afraid to take a stand. That's fantastic. And I will get around to seeing it, but I have to say, it's just not something I'm like,
yeah,
I will.
If I spoiled that for people, but I will also say the movie's been out for a month now. And if you're on any social media, you've probably seen half the reveals at this point. So,
yeah. What about the Blake Lively movie? It Ends With Us, almost fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. I've heard pretty good stuff. What did you think of that?
I thought that was actually pretty good. It's very much like a Nicholas Sparks movie, but if it had two brain cells, you know, like it's, it's wittier and snappier than you would expect to be from a movie like this. And I think there's an inherent tension, and the movie doesn't totally solve this tension of trying to make a, you know, swoony romantic drama love triangle with also domestic abuse kind of being the big dramatic hook of the movie. There's an uneasy tension of trying to make that into, you know, a polished Hollywood, you know, plot line. But I do think it tries some interesting novel ways to tell that story. I think Blake Lively is quite, and I'm not a big Blake Lively fan. I tend to find her a little lacking, but I think she's pretty good in this. And I think, and you know what else I love is that it made a ton of money. And that's great to see. For the past 3 weekends now, we have had Deadpool and Wolverine making a ton of money. Not surprising, but good to see if you're a movie theater.
For sure.
It Ends With Us, a drama for women, making tons of money at the box office. I believe it crossed $100 million already, probably today, which is great to see because dramas don't do well in theaters, ostensibly, but this did. And Hollywood, every 2 years, needs to be reminded that, hey, women would like movies aimed at them too. You know, that's not to say that women can't enjoy an action movie or anything like that. You know, making movies aimed at female audiences, for some odd reason, Hollywood refuses to accept that that's something that is successful. You know, Magic Mike made a ton of money. Sex and the City made a ton of money. Where the Crawdads Sing made a ton of money. And every time that happens, Hollywood's like, oh, that's interesting. Let's never speak of this ever again. So hopefully this happened and hopefully they're, you know, running to Colleen Hoover and running to all sorts of, you know, authors and stuff like that. And, you know, scripts by female writers with centering female stories. And hopefully they're like, hey, can we give you a budget, a reasonable budget, and we can make that back because there's an audience for this stuff. So
right.
Hopefully they remember that lesson this time.
Did the studio mislead people the way they marketed it? Because I heard about that. I heard that they kind of glossed over the whole domestic violence thing in the trailer and in the ads, but it's pretty heavy movie.
The trailers, I think, are pretty honest about what the movie is. Okay. As much as a trailer is going to be honest about this, I mean, you're not going to make $100 million on a movie that is selling itself as a stoic drama about domestic abuse. That is a good way to not make money at the box office. And you know that there has been problem. People have had problems with Blake Lively talking about the movie and selling the movie on Instagram by being, you know, kind of light and bubbly about it and being like, you know, oh, wear your florals to the movie. And, you know, oh, my fashion line is involved. And, you know, I get it. It seems cynical. It seems, A, it's a movie. No actual people were abused in the making of this film. But, and B, it's marketing. You know, if every extremely serious drama marketed itself as an extremely serious drama, they wouldn't make money. You know,
right.
They didn't sell Dune on the philosophical debates in that movie. They sold right. it on the giant visuals and the action. You know, I am happy that people are seeing a good drama in theaters. And if yeah. we can get to a point where we don't have to kind of hide the messiness of these stories, that's something that appeals to people, that would be great. But that is not the society we live in now, or honestly have pretty much ever lived in.
My guest is Milwaukee-based film critic Matt Miller. Always fun to talk to Matt. Matt, you said that you saw Alien 2. So I want to talk about that. And then you said you had some nice, you thought there were some gems coming out in September. So tell us first about Alien. That's another one I haven't seen. I was on vacation last week. I'm a little behind.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with Alien Romulus. It is not like a brand new Alien. It's not, you know, reinventing Alien. It's not like Alien Covenant or Prometheus, where it's kind of, that was Ridley Scott kind of toying with the world and playing within the sandbox. This is very similar to the director Fede Alvarez's Evil Dead movie, where he's kind of, you know, remixing and mixing and matching elements and creating something that for the most part feels pretty new and feels fun. And maybe in the aftermath of the movie, you're like, oh, I suppose there was a lot of like homages in there, but it feels fun and exciting and tense while you're watching it. And I think that's, I think part of that is just due to the Alien franchise itself. It is just such a unique concept. It's a unique world. It is such a fun sandbox, like I said before, to play in.
Yeah.
But I think no matter what, it doesn't feel like any other movies out there. No other movie has that kind of gothic, elegant, nasty grossness, you know. It's right. very hard to find the kind of gooey grandiosity that the Alien series has, and I think Romulus is just very satisfying to watch in that regard, in terms of like the texture of it.
Yeah, it's interesting too. What I read about it was it's set between the first two Aliens, right? The original Alien, and then Aliens the sequel. It's set right kind of in there. I haven't really seen that before, I don't think.
Yeah, I wouldn't think too hard about the timeline. And I'm not a big timeline guy either. Like, I'm not a big, like, you know, when people watching the X-Men movies and being like, well, the timeline is screwed up. And I'm like, I don't care. It's a movie. Like, I don't know. That sounds like accounting to me. But it does kind of exist. You can put it in between those two movies. And there's lots of references. Arguably, when the movie gets its most reference heavy is when it's at its worst. There is kind of like a reincarnated situation going on in the movie that I don't love at all, that I think is unnecessary and kind of ethically messy. And you know, there's a line in the movie that is such a point to a classic line from the original movies for no other reason that the audience, again, gets to do the Leo DiCaprio point at the screen and go, I recognize that. but for the most part, it's just a really fun kind of gooey, scary thrill ride.
That's interesting. All right, so let's turn to stuff we haven't seen yet, Matt. First of all, I think the summer box office kind of limped out of the gate, and then bam, Inside Out 2 and Despicable Me and Quiet Place and all these great films. Would you say it's been successful overall? And what can we look forward to in September, the films that come out after blockbuster season?
Yeah, I think considering Hollywood kneecapped itself by the strikes postponing a lot of what was expected to come out, and kind of starting the year off with some really unproven material like The Fall Guy and Furiosa, which I liked all those movies, but those were not movies that were guaranteed blockbusters. Those were those were swings. And they didn't unfortunately make the money to kind of qualify as a hit, or at least But, you know, late in the summer, we've talked about, you know, Deadpool made a ton of money. Despicable Me's made a ton of money. Inside Out 2's made a lot of money. And that's a lot of sequels. So you have It Ends With Us making a lot of money. And, you know, an Alien Romulus making money. Long Legs, the indie horror movie starring Nicolas Cage, becoming the biggest hit in Neon Studios history.
How about that? Talk about that? Did you like that movie?
We can. It's a good movie. I don't think it's the scariest movie of all time, the way the buzz around that movie was. But as far as like kind of a moody, atmospheric, indie kind of horror movie goes, I think it's kind of one of a kind. And again, that is very you know, as somebody who pays attention to the box office and wants to see more original movies in theaters and knows that the only way that will happen is if people show up, the fact that audiences showed up for this kind of off-kilter, you know, horror thriller, more in a Silence of the Lambs vibe than a classic, you know, boo gotcha scare fest.
Right.
And then kept showing up too. I was expecting that movie to go through the floor after its first weekend when people saw it and were like, oh, it's kind of more moody and atmospheric as opposed to jump scary. But it just kept making money, which is tells me that people liked what they saw and that it became a conversation piece, which is really exciting. So again, you know, the sequels were hits in the late summer, and you know, the original movies did really well, and genres that Hollywood has kind of disregarded were doing well. And you know, now we're in this kind of weird middle zone, you know, in between the summer and Oscar season, where you kind of get, you know, them kind of dumping some movies out that may have some real potential, but also maybe really weird. You've got some horror movies like Afraid, which is like an AI horror movie situation thriller. I'll be interested to see how Beetlejuice does the sequel. I think that's going to be a big hit. I don't even have a lot of love for Beetlejuice. That movie was kind of came out
same.
Before. Kind of came out before my time, and when I was a little kid, it was too scary for me, too intense. And I see these trailers, and I'm like, that looks really fun. I like seeing these actors. I like seeing Tim Burton using practical effects and playing with his kind of macabre, you know, play sets, but without the kind of gross CGI that he fell in love with Alice in Wonderland and even Dumbo and stuff like that.
Totally. So,
I'm excited.
Matt, let's pause right there. Can we keep you for a couple more minutes? We got a very quick break here.
Absolutely.
All right. Matt Miller is here. We are talking movies, and we'll hear what he has to say about some September gems. And we'll talk about that and Milwaukee Film. This is Nightlight with Peach Wava on the Civic Media Radio Network. From Appleton says, nice show tonight, Pete and Conrad. Yes, I scrub my feet in the shower. Good for you, Jim. I think it needs to be done. You're in the 60 percentile then of Americans, supposedly, and I think that's a proud group. Matt Miller is with us here. He's a film critic, but I can still ask him, Matt, do you wash your feet in the shower?
I do not. My feet are too ticklish to do it.
Even if you're doing it yourself?
Even when I pull out one of those like pumice stones, I try to like scrub the feet and stuff like that, I just end up feeling very ticklish and slipping and falling in the shower. That's how I'm going to die. I'm going to be scrubbing my feet and I'm going to slip and fall. And you can pre-write your obituary.
I could see that. That actually makes a lot of sense. Hey, let's pivot if you don't mind, Matt. I want to ask you about bundling. Everywhere I look, you know, the networks are combining. Is this a good thing? And do you actually save money when you do it? And why is this such a trend?
I mean, you won't be saving money for long because they're going to raise the prices after. Like they, like all these streaming services, they start low price and then, you know, they keep upping the charges every like $2 every 6 months or so. And they're doing this because only one streaming service is successful, and it's called Netflix. And all these other studios jumped into the streaming game, not really knowing how to do it, kind of doing it half-heartedly, and or jumping in too gung-ho and spending money irrationally for something that people weren't going to sign up for. The only other one that's really been successful is Disney Plus, and Disney has a brand behind it, you know?
Right.
Disney has like a kind of, you know, baseline ability. Like people know what Disney is and they know what that product is.
Right.
But yeah, they're doing this because these, you know, your Paramount Pluses and your Peacocks and your HBO Maxes, they know that like they're not making money and it's going to be very hard to make money in the future, because I mean, who's adding subscriptions? You know, who at this point in the streaming universe is like, I should add another streaming service. Who's thinking like that right now? Unless there's like a sporting event on it. That's why, you know, they're all trying to get in on the NFL and the NBA, and because they know sports are the one thing left that people have to watch live, and that people will buy these streaming services or get into them, but then they'll desubscribe and you've made no money, or you've made too much money. So that's why the bundling is happening. It's these other streaming services trying to find a way to survive when the streaming bubble has popped.
That's really interesting. That's a great answer. I never thought of that. Like, yeah, you're right. Everybody who streams pretty much already streams, or they're going to drop some and add others. So it's got to be really crazy competitive.
We did that in my house, and I'm a media guy. I had all the streaming services, but after a while, you're like, why am I spending $9 on Paramount Plus? I've watched it one time to watch Legends of the Hidden Temple. You know, That's a waste of my money. Like Apple TV Plus, you know, they've got some great shows on there, but they have no library. So why am I spending money on this? And I think most people feel that way. Most audiences feel that way, other than Netflix. And they feel that way about Netflix because Netflix is habitual. Netflix is what people, it's their comfort food. It's the same reason why people haven't left Twitter despite everything Elon Musk has done with Twitter. It is a part of the habit. That is where when news happens, people go to Twitter. They don't go to Blue Sky. They don't go to Threads. Twitter is in the DNA of how the internet works. So Netflix is in the DNA of how people watch streaming. They don't feel that same way about Peacock or Paramount Plus or even Disney Plus.
You know, it's so funny you say that. And the one thing we still have, like now they're rolling out shows once a week. Some people like that. I like to binge watch. I like to know I can keep watching if I want to. The one thing we still have, it seems like, with streaming services is we can buy it month to month. I always mean to say I'm going to get Apple for 1 month and watch 3 shows, or I'm going to get HBO for 1 month and watch 2 shows I want to watch, but I don't. I keep them all and I pay hundreds of dollars a month. It's mad.
Well, that's because they make it also stupid hard to desubscribe. Yeah. They make it so you have to find the secret button hidden on there, and they'll ask you 5 times if, like, are you sure you want to leave Paramount? Are you sure? Right. If we know where you live.
Right.
And I do. It is funny that all these streaming services now, a lot of them are pivoting towards, get this, a kind of cable live TV option where you can turn on a channel that has stuff on. And it's just so funny to see the streaming revolution kind of eat its own tail and just become cable again and become regular TV again, where it's like, okay, put on the Throwbacks channel and you can watch Throwbacks, or put on the Office channel and you could just watch the Office all you want. It's like, this is what all this revolution and evolution, this was about ruining theaters and ruining, you know, actors, and, you know, ruining the money that actors are able to make, both big name actors and low paid actors and writers. That is,
and like, writers, yeah,
destroyed the residual industry in Hollywood, and we have destroyed theatrical, and we've destroyed cable, and we've destroyed physical media, all in the name of making worse cable. And no one is making more money.
That is the voice of Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller. Tomorrow night on the show, Richard Reilly, a Wisconsin native and a very prolific actor, Richard Reilly, will be here. Matt, we have about 30 seconds to a minute. Give us a movie we can look forward to, one of those September gems you think will be great that we should go see.
Yeah, there's one out now, and there's one hopefully coming out in a week or so. The one out now is called Sing Sing, starring Domingo as an imprisoned man who kind of inspires his fellow inmates by putting on theater shows. It's gotten great buzz. The studio, A24, kind of had an awkward situation where they released it on the coasts in July, but then Twisted came out and Deadpool came out, and I think they were scared to release it amongst those big giants. And now it's kind of coming out finally here in Milwaukee now that the buzz has died down. But I'm just happy it's here. I know that's showing at the Downer right now. Definitely worth your time. And then one was a film festival movie, and I hope it's coming. I think it's coming to the Oriental sometime soon. It's called Good One. It is about a young woman who goes on a nature hike with her dad and his best friend. And it's just a really small but lovely movie. About, you know, growing up as a woman with men taking up all the oxygen in the room, and kind of the things you notice and the things you learn from just watching grown-ups interact with one another and watching your parents and kind of the wisdom you pick up along the way quietly. It's a really lovely movie, really, really great film. I hope people check that out. I hope it looks like the Oriental Theater is going to get that either next weekend or the weekend after.
Very cool.
If it's there, you should definitely check out. Tiny, tiny movie, very much worth your while.
That's awesome. Matt, as always, hey, I'll give you one as we leave here. We Grown Now, a movie about two.
Oh, good movie.
We'll talk. All right, we'll talk about that next time. That's a great movie, too. As always, Matt, so much fun. Let's do it again soon. Have a great night. And as always, buddy, thank you.
It's a deal. Thank you. I had a blast. Right.
That's Matt Miller, Milwaukee film critic. Always fun to talk to Matt. I'd like to thank Mike Toomey, too. Tomorrow night, Richard Reilly is on the show and a replay of Pat McGann. This has been Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. On behalf of Conrad, good night, Wisconsin. Best friend's house, I loved you.